This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 343 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Marine Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
Welcome back, Miss Melissa.
The inconsistent one. That's me.
That's okay. Bill was giving me the eye when I was introducing the show. I don't know what that means. What?
You're paranoid. I was not. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm kidding. Okay, so we left last episode with the mission. Mission Stitch.
I completed it.
I was going to ask how many of you completed the mission.
I completed it. It was 2 days. It wasn't one day.
I did it back to back because I'm a pro.
Of course you are.
Yeah. So 2 out of 4 ain't bad. 50-50.
Great meatloaf song.
Yeah, I did none of the homework.
I did half of the homework. Yeah. And listen, I did mean to watch at least the old Stitch. Still haven't done it. Just so not into it at the moment.
I will say, ahead of my thoughts on the new film is I'm not as precious with the 2002 one just because I don't really know it as, you know, as a lot of people seem to.
There's a lot of love for that movie.
It's weird. Yeah. I had friends posting photos on social media that they bought this like $60 package where you got like a popcorn, a plushie, and a bunch of other shit. And I don't get it. Like, I just don't get it.
Lilo and Stitch are a big deal, man. A lot of people love those characters.
A lot.
$60 a person or $60 for like a couple or a family?
No, like $60 for a popcorn, a drink, and a plushie.
Yeah.
Like a giant Stitch pup, like teddy bear.
Yeah. Right.
$60.
You're paying mostly for that teddy bear.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah but you know, a large popcorn at Cineplex, I think, is like $20. So
yeah, pretty much.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Before we start, I have a trivia question for you guys.
Oh, gosh. Right. Yes.
Are you ready?
I love it.
No, no, but okay.
I always bring weird shit to the table. So the Cannes Film Festival just ended.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the distributor, Neon, won its 6th straight Palme d'Or.
I knew this. Nice.
That's wicked.
Here's your trivia question.
Oh, fuck.
Excluding this year, what are the other 5?
Parasite.
That's correct.
Anora.
Correct.
Right here.
Triangle of Sadness.
Correct. That was the one I didn't think you guys would get.
So we're at 4,
that
right?
That was Neon, yeah.
Damn.
So, yeah, 2019 was Parasite. 2021 was directed by Julia Ducournau.
Oh, Titan.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Then the Triangle of Sadness.
Okay.
And then, should I give the...
Just tell us.
Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And then Anora.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good roster.
Titan won the Palme d'Or. Like, that's such a crazy movie.
I'm no kidding, eh?
I saw a video. It popped up. I forget what I was looking at, but it was the initial reaction to Irreversible when it screened at Cannes.
And collapsing?
It's just people pissed off, like, just fucking mad coming out of that. Disgusting! Disgusting! He's finished! We know your name. Like, they're all like really mad and stuff. It's just hilarious.
Did they see I Stand Alone? Like, that movie was, if anything, worse than Irreversible. Like, Irreversible is terrible, but I Stand Alone is nuts. Yeah. Oh.
Listen, the French are the French.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
They booed Wes Anderson, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I've heard some.
Listen, I can't say I'm surprised, but no? That's just me. No, I think Wes Anderson is overrated, man.
Marina is not an Anderson fan.
I am not.
I keep forgetting that. I honestly
I am not on that bandwagon. I have not drank that Kool-Aid. I am on the outside of the Wes Anderson bandwagon.
You don't even like Life Aquatic or Royal Tenenbaums?
The Royal Tenenbaums and Fantastic Mr. Fox are legitimately, and maybe Isle of Dogs in that order, are probably my three favorite. Wes Anderson movies. And
notice two of those are animated films.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like not even like Grand Budapest or
Rushmore.
To the point where I've stopped watching them because I don't enjoy them. Like, why am I doing this to myself?
Well, Asteroid City and French Dispatch were pretty terrible. So you didn't really miss much.
Yeah, I stopped caring. Maybe but I never started. Time, I don't know.
But at the same time, there's a lot of people that love both movies.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate
it. I don't think they're terrible. They're not terrible. They're just not as strong as his earlier work, maybe.
Yeah. And for me, I will say, like, I appreciate the craftsmanship and I think what he's doing is interesting. It's just not for me. Mm-hmm. And I've just given up on the fact that it's never going to be for me. And that's fine. Not all the movies need to be for me. So.
My only worry right now is that I'm not going to get in Penticton.
I hope so.
I'll have to go to Kelowna, which I did do this past weekend, and I will talk about that.
So I'm going to do this one earlier. I'm going to continue the gimmick. Fuck Life Aquatic. I hate that movie. Oh,
for fuck's sake.
Oh, please.
Oh, that's just like a gunshot. Like, yeah.
We're like six
minutes in and he shoots me with a shotgun.
Why is that your favorite of the Anderson movies?
It's in there. It's in the mix. Yeah. I really like Life Aquatic a lot. There's a lot going for it in my opinion.
Yeah, the David Bowie song at the end.
All of his songs in it are
The slow motion walk to Queen good. Bitch, that's pretty awesome. Yes. Rest of the movie is dog shit. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry,
Steve. Right. I'm just going to say, all right.
Had to keep the gimmick up.
Now I understand your feelings on Dispatch and Asteroid City.
Yeah, for sure. Jafar Panahi won the Palme d'Or this year, and that's freaking incredible.
And it's going to cause a lot of political stir as well. So it already has.
Yeah. He's an incredible filmmaker. And
yes.
He's had a really bad 15 years.
No kidding.
Let's go. Let's celebrate the man. I can't wait to see the film. I suppose it's a thriller. And that's, I'm down with that. He's a world-class filmmaker. It's going to be great.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really want to see the Joachim Trier film.
Yes. I saw that as Joachim Trier summer.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of my favorite things that I've seen in a long time. I'm like, I hope that catches fire.
We'll see.
It feels so intellectual. Like, it feels so to be in the know. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I've been on this train for a while, everybody. Yeah.
It's like the French parlor, the French parlors. This is what we're talking about. It's Joachim Trier summer.
I think Louder Than Bombs was the first one that got me on that train.
I don't know if I remember what mine was. I'd have to look to see what else he's made because I don't remember.
Did I see Reprise at VIFF? I think that's his first film.
Probably.
Yeah. And then Oslo, August 31st.
That might have been my first.
Which is a masterpiece.
It is very, very good.
He's an incredible filmmaker.
Yeah, I think I think that might have been my first.
VIFF's going to be really good this year.
Yeah, that'll be VIFF, right?
It depends on when it opens, but I think it opens in October, so we'll probably get it like 2 weeks early. But okay. I'm down. Seat with a big crowd. Mm-hmm. Yeah, VIFF's going to be sneaky good this year. Lots of really good European talent have made great films, supposedly. So add a bunch of American indies in, some good Canadian film. Yeah.
Hey, and, look at that.
We'll be
that.
Good.
Good
we'll
guy good. There. Good guy there.
Too good. Too good. Okay. Let's talk other summer things like Mission Impossible, The yeah. Final Reckoning, or the first half of our mission. I don't even
mission
know.
Stitch, y'all.
Mission Stitch, y'all. Mission Stitch. In that order, if you choose to accept it.
That is correct. This message will self-destruct in an hour yeah. and 20 minutes. Usually that's the length of the show.
Yeah, that's roughly, roughly, maybe a little bit more. Maybe a little bit more. Up. That's generous.
I saw Stitch first.
Oh, you Lilo Impossible'd.
Okay, that's
what happens if you don't accept the mission?
I don't know, actually.
Nothing. Like,
you just like, live your life.
You're yeah. forced. Okay. You're forced to watch
unfollowed
this movie.
Unfollowed through threats. I don't know.
Like, that's what I did. So I guess yeah. I just don't. Like, I guess I just yeah. go to the bottom just, of the mission pile.
Yeah.
I only get shitty missions from here on out.
Yeah, your seniority is taken away.
Listen, until Ethan Hunt's team
in the office now, from now on.
Listen, somebody's got to pick up the slack when Ethan's entire team is gone, and it's gonna happen.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's like this big dramatic moment of you being offered the mission. You're like, no.
No, thanks. Yeah, that's the movie, roll credits.
Yeah, it's over.
The it's shortest over. Mission impossible ever.
Yeah.
Like, can they let you live if you know about the mission? And you've turned it down?
We've never gotten that far. I don't know. I think it's tough to live either way. Because that's what it seems like. That's what makes it so impossible. There's a lot of impossible in this movie, too. Like, a lot of, like, underwater impossible.
Yes.
Tom Cruise is going to be really angry at you because you've, like, stopped him from being the savior by not accepting that mission. Because he is the savior. Yeah.
God complex that play, man.
He is cinema savior, but he's, I don't know, he's, in my mind, he's also kind of undeniable. He's Tom fucking Cruise.
Agreed.
He's Tom 110%. Fucking Cruise. And he's, like, I will immediately say that this is the worst of the films from
the McQuarrie
Ghost Protocol on.
For sure. I could go with that.
But I still enjoyed the hell out of this film. But yeah, it's not great.
No.
And
no.
There's very little in the way of story here. And I think that's the major plot. Like, for me, that's the major fail. It does not feel like a spy thriller. Like, most of the others have had an element of the spiness. This is just like a very, very loose story, ridiculous story plot at that, to bring together like this, these like never ending action sequences, which are amazing, but I prefer a little more context and like story to my adventuring. Mm-hmm. But it's still super impressive. And at the end of the day, I mean, I walked away thinking it was still a better movie than most other movies that I watch. It's just when you compare it to the other Mission Impossible movies, it's really not that great.
But if you eliminate that plane chase, what do you think of this film?
I still think it's pretty great. I thought the last... Yeah, I do. I thought the underwater submarine stuff was really fun and interesting, especially when he's like the whole thing, the mechanics of... when you fill the thing with water and it starts to roll on itself. I did not expect that. But then when it happened, you're like, of course, that's physics, right?
That was a decently cool scene, except for before he went down, they explained how he was going to die if he did a bunch of things. And then he did them.
Because he wouldn't be Ethan Hunt if he didn't do them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody said it makes sense. And you look at the number of writers credited with the story here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. You mean a Tom Cruise film, a film by Tom Cruise, produced by Tom Cruise, starring Tom Cruise film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he write it too?
I didn't see his name in the credits, but maybe.
No, it's like it's Christopher McQuarrie and the guy that co-wrote the last one. Actually, the whole like crew, like a lot of like the main parts, like your composer, your cinematographer and everything, these are all new guys, and their first big films was Dead Reckoning. So these are like Tom Cruise trained guys. they're making, it's exactly like Bill said, they're making a Tom Cruise movie. So he has his own crafted team.
Yeah.
And this is the same team that's going to grab a director and do, you know, Top Gun 3 and Days of Thunder 2, because they're in the canon to do.
And I cannot wait. Can I tell you, Days of Thunder 2? I'm super excited.
I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm excited. I got my ticket for F1. So because I noticed they went on sale. That and Jurassic World went on sale. So I'm like, okay, I'll buy those tickets now. And a secret, a mystery movie coming up that I've deduced is The Life of Chuck. So
did you
that's my guess.
Did you see the last mystery movie? The one that was last
no week? Unfortunately, I was just getting back into town. Yeah, okay. Bring Her Back.
Yeah.
I'm really upset I missed that one, because I'm hoping that I get that in my city so I don't have to go to Kelowna. Because I already have to go to Kelowna to see Friendship. And I assume I'm going to have to go to Kelowna to see something else that's coming out in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, it's just the way it goes.
So the first hour of this film is unwatchable.
Okay. It's
a lot of flashback.
It is a lot of flashback. Did they credit De Palma? Because they maybe should have.
They should have. There's a lot.
The first hour of this film feels like the usual opening credits, where it does flashback and show stuff that's coming up. That's the first hour of this film.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, it gets a little better with the underwater stuff and the plane. But my God, there's so much stuff in this film is not explained, or it's over-explained than not done. And it's the Tom Cruise film. His team disappears for 90% of this film. Like Simon Pegg could have shown up in the first hour and said a line of dialogue and eliminated the first hour of the film. He didn't. It's a 2 hour and 50 minute movie. 2 hours and 50 minutes of absolute bullshit. This is why people aren't going to movies. It's too fucking long. And it's so convoluted. And there's a scene where he is literally falling from the sky and his parachute is on fire. And he crashes to the ground and you think he's dead. And I guess there's a backup chute. They don't show it. It just shows it on the ground. Even after the guy is said on the plane, I have the only parachute. Like, it's just shit like that. This movie sucks.
I don't feel that strong.
Gladiator 2 moment.
I am.
I think he is. I think he really is. Oh, wow.
Other than the fact that I can say that plane scene is absolutely incredible. Tom Cruise is an absolute madman.
Yeah.
And you could tell they didn't fake that. Like, his hair and his face are like all contorted, like he has got wind damage going through him. Like, he is doing that shit. He is incredible. I'll give him that. And the underwater scene is pretty cool. Other than he takes his wetsuit off.
Yeah. He's in his underwear a good chunk of this movie.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
There is a good...
And, you know, he looks really good for 62 years old. I'll give him that. But
Because he's turned 63, like, as this movie is coming out.
I know. Like, dude, put some jorts on. Like, yeah. I'm dying here. Like, but yeah, there is better movies to watch in the theater right now. Like, legitimately, go and see The Accountant 2 again if you haven't seen it, if you need to see it.
Yeah,
if it's still in the theater. That movie is way more action-packed, more coherent, has John Bernthal having a lot of fun in it, and Ben Affleck playing a weird dude quite well. And if The Amateur isn't still in the theater, that movie also has way more action. And fuck, if you have Apple Plus, watch Fountain of Youth. That movie is so much goddamn better than this.
We're gonna have to fight.
But that movie sucks too. It is better than this.
No, it's not. It is not better than this. You cannot compare the two.
I haven't seen Fountain of Youth yet, so I cannot attest.
We can get to that later. I mean, I fully agree. It is by far the weakest of the Mission Impossible movies. The first hour is very slow. I was not bored for any of it. My butt was not sore. I didn't think about the running time. I didn't feel the running time. But I will admit that it's not the best movie out of the franchise. Mm-hmm. But it's like people are going for the spectacle. That's why I wanted to see it. And I walked away satisfied. Was I thrilled? No. But I was fine. I paid my $16 and I was perfectly happy.
Sorry, I yelled a lot.
That's okay. You're allowed to be upset. I can't believe this movie got you this angry. That's so funny.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
I must say, Melissa, that actually did feel pretty good. I understand you now. I like it.
Yeah, and now you've given me all the justification I need to wait to watch this on a plane.
Oh, just as Tom Cruise intended it.
Yeah, no, you need to watch it on the phone, just as he intended. On a phone, on a plane.
Well, yeah, hopefully in the IMAX ratio, just to make it even weirder. Yeah, didn't like this one. If it hadn't been for that plane scene, I might have given it half a star in Letterboxd.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, didn't like this at all.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Like, you can't win them all, friends.
Nope.
No, you can't win them all.
The spoiler that I was going to talk about is so minor in comparison to Bill's just absolute hatred of this film. Shea Whigham.
Underutilized.
The reveal on his character, though. That he's Jim Phelps Jr., the connection to the original Mission Impossible, as well as being John Voight's character in. But it also does that work timeline as well?
Probably not.
I mean, they can massage it. Come on.
I guess so.
I will say there's some really good TV actors in this.
There's some really great, like a lot
of Tillman, Hannah Winningham.
What's he from? That's the Severance.
He's from Severance.
I was just like,
a lot of people. I think a lot of people in the theater recognized him because there was a loud, "Hey, it's that guy!"
Yeah.
and
Katie O'Brien's in this. She's good.
Yes, Katie O'Brien's amazing. Really There's great.
A lot I of really good her. People in this film, and they're really underutilized. And as I said, his whole entire team is like Haley Atwell and Simon Pegg disappear. Like I don't know where they are
for a big chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
They're on a separate mission, dude. They had different orders.
Yeah. Okay.
Hannah Waddingham was in two movies I watched last weekend.
I'm guessing, like Melissa, they said no to the mission and just like fucked off to like.
No, Ethan gave them direction on where they were supposed to go, dude. Did you fall asleep during that part of the movie?
No, I.
He just checked out. He's like, whatever.
Brian De Palma employed that actor, and then he gets to bookend the series.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name again? William.
Yeah, I forget it. Yeah.
They said his name like so many times in the movie.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Somebody in my audience yelled out, "Stopped disarming bombs."
Disarming bombs
because they did it like seven times.
Isn't that Mission Impossible though?
No, but it's the same bomb, just bigger seven times.
It's true. It does seem look like the same bomb.
And then like this time, like
it is the same bad guy.
Disarm it while falling out of a plane.
Yeah. Well, it is the same bad guy, so it makes sense that it's the same bomb. Just
so biggest laugh at my screening is that bullshit machine that Tom Cruise goes into to talk to the entity. He puts so terrible.
I'm like, who wrote this thing? Why do you have to go into a machine to talk to a fucking AI? Don't you just talk to your phone? Like, this makes no sense whatsoever. Let's go into the coffin.
And it can shock and hurt you.
Yeah.
Get into this coffin where I can hurt you.
No kidding.
the person that like intercuts Lawnmower Man into that scene on YouTube, I will just love you for the rest of your
life. Oh my God.
Make it happen. I fucking love Lawnmower Man.
If you add Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War, you're all about it. Down maybe, for maybe. A rewatch on that, aren't we?
I'm in. It's been a long time. A long, long time. Okay, yeah. So I think it's fair to say Bill hated this movie.
Yeah, sorry.
It says skip.
Yeah, it. Yeah. But I didn't hate it as much. I have rated it like Letterboxd style. I gave it a 3 out of 5. And so that's like kind of fresh-ish. Like I was coming on it fresh. So I still enjoy it. It's still Ethan Hunt. It's still Tom Cruise doing his Mission Impossible thing. And all the cameos. I mean, Nick Offerman's in this fucking movie. Like what the actual fuck?
That whole staff is like a murderer's row of good
Peter good Ramsey. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, Janik McTeer. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I kind of figure because Peter Ramsey's in Top Gun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of figured that one. But yeah, it's just and just everyone that appears. We already said a bunch of them. It's kind of going out on a sputter a bit. Like I can see the disappointment.
Yeah, and it's like sort of final take on it as well. Is it's disappointing that the final movie in the franchise, if it is the final movie, I assume that at this point it's probably the final movie with Tom Cruise, but I find it hard to believe they'll kill this franchise at this point. And that new opening credit sequence is pretty nice for the last of the franchise.
I thought Tom Cruise was championing Glenn Howell to take over the reins.
And I would not be surprised because it would be stupid to kill this now.
Do you remember when they tried to pass it to Jeremy Renner?
Oh, yeah.
He actually said in his book why he didn't take it. I forget what it was.
I didn't realize that at some point they had tried to get it to him.
Yeah, that movie, the one that Ghost Protocol was supposed to be the handing over the reins. Was it Ghost Protocol or was it the third film?
I don't remember, but yeah, I do remember that.
First, yeah.
I'd be okay with Glenn Powell taking over.
But at the same time, like, Cruz is a genius because he's also palling up near all of these hot stars that are producing and in the back end of all of their movies. Cause I saw him buddying up with Michael B. Jordan as well.
Yep.
Yeah. Giving big praise to Sinners and everything. And like he knows where to make the moves. Tom Cruise is fucking smart. I've seen a lot of these British Film Institute talk clips from a Q&A that he did. And a lot of really like cool old stories and stuff like that. But at the same time, his like ambition, like, you know, even if this movie doesn't land, and at this point it did half the money that Lilo on opening weekend, it did like 78 million or something like that. He's still gonna, there's still a Top Gun Maverick in the bank for him. So
I want him to go for his Oscar. He's doing his next movie is the Iñárritu movie, which is going to be great.
Yes. And yes. What's it called again?
I don't know, but weird. Go for your Oscar.
He tried that though. Like they fucked him with Born on the 4th of July. They fucked him with Magnolia. They're never going to give him an Oscar.
So fucked him with.
They're going to give him an honorary Oscar when he's like 80. It's just the reality of it at this point.
And it doesn't mean shit at that point.
No. No.
It means a fucking thing.
I just also want to point out that Jamie Foxx got a supporting actor nomination for Collateral and Tom Cruise did not.
No comment.
That's so fucked up too.
Yeah. Collateral rules.
Collateral is amazing.
That movie's so good. I love the Statham like thing, like the transporters in this
world. I love transporter movies. even the third one is not bad. They're just silly as shit. I love them.
They're absolutely silly. And then they're like, hey, how about we put a guy that you don't know that you've never seen this guy before at all and put it in a theatrically released movie and we'll just call it Reloaded. And you're like, who the fuck is Ed Skrein?
Yeah. So yeah, my thoughts are just find your local IMAX theater. time out approximately, I don't know, 2 hours and 30 minutes. Add some trailers into that maybe. And watch the airplane scene. It's incredible. That is it. Don't even watch it on Paramount Plus. You have better things to do. Like Melissa, you could watch Yellowstone. Come on.
Oh boy.
Yikes.
I don't endorse that.
Oh boy. Hey, this is a theater movie. I think it's a theater movie. Tom wants you to see it in theater, and I am commanded by Tom because he talked to me at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
Zombie mode must.
Yes.
Must yeah. influence everybody to see in theaters. AstroTurf, the cinema for Tom, Sound of Freedom.
I wonder if Tom Cruise knows how much 2 liters of milk costs.
Fuck no. Come on. He probably doesn't know how much a Rolex costs at this point.
Look, a lot of these people just found out what the word groceries meant.
Yeah.
All right.
What is that? So,
exactly. No, Trump invented it, so don't worry about it.
Let's be honest. Tom Cruise lives off of the blood and sweat of what's the religion? Scientology?
Xenu?
Yeah,
he's exactly. off the backs of Xenu. Simon Pegg was telling a story about how he invited Tom Cruise over for like tea or something like that, and he had to like landing patch in his backyard garden for Tom Cruise to land his helicopter in. It's like,
which he flew himself, right? This?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. He flew it himself. Yeah, because he's fucking insane. So, of course.
Nice.
All right. I think we have waxed poetic on Mission Impossible for like 35 minutes.
And not actually about it.
No, about everything. Well, we did talk about the movie.
Adjacent.
Yes. I think everybody That's knows fair. How we feel about it. Let's talk about the second half of this. Of this mission, Lilo and Stitch, the remake, the live action, Disney back up the dump trucks of money. And clearly they were successful.
For sure.
They made a shit ton of money. Yeah.
They made a lot of money, and I shudder to think what Bill thinks. So let's go to Bill with the weather.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's just completely useless. What's the point of even making this other than just to make money? There's nothing better here. Like it's just, if anything, it's worse, but like, it's still kind of the same. The family stuff is really good. The two sisters, I think, are quite good. The Zach Galifianakis, Billy Magnus and stuff is terrible.
I really like Billy Magnus.
Oh, really? Oh,
so I really bad. Thought he was hilarious.
And Stitch is Stitch. Like, it's good stuff. Like, it's, yeah. he's it's a fun thing. Like the alien stuff at the beginning is a little dumb. The coming to Earth, the Earth stuff is fine. It's just this. They're just doing that. They have nothing else other than making money at Disney now. Like, there's no originality, no creativity. It's just, let's remake every franchise we have. And make a this is gonna make a billion easy, like probably by next week. Like, good for them, but you have no creativity anymore, and it's starting to really show. Like, I didn't even really kind of thought, why even see this? Like, I knew exactly what this would be, and I was completely correct. Like, it's just fine. Watch the original. Everybody's seen it. Everybody owns it. Just watch it again. Yeah. I'm angry this episode. I'm sorry. I need to drink water. Sorry.
Yeah. I think it's the better of these adaptations. I thought it was the best. I thought it was honestly the best of these adaptations.
No, but look at the track record.
Yeah, the track record's not great.
No.
Granted. Like 100% granted. I don't know. It was fun. And some of the comedy bits worked for me. I thought there was supposed to be a lot more Elvis stuff in the original, wasn't there?
Yeah.
They kind of cut all of that stuff out. But like I said, I'm not as precious with, and I don't remember a lot of the deeper details of the original film. So The internet's a lot angrier about things like the fact that Zach Galifianakis isn't Russian. Jumba is supposed to have like a David Ogden Stiers in the original, and he's supposed to have like a Russian accent. I don't know. It was okay. It was okay. I didn't land up on the on like regretting.
No, I didn't regret it.
My time spent.
Yeah, and two words: Tia Carrere Schwing.
Yes, yes. Tia Carrere's in it. And also, Tia Carrere was the original nanny in Lilo and Stitch, yeah. And the original vid, Jason Scott Lee, is in the film as Nani's boss at the restaurant. So I was like, hey, old cast members.
we'll throw you a bone.
Yeah, exactly. That's that. Yeah, I think Billy Magnuson's funny. I like it when he does comedy. Game Night's fucking hilarious, largely because of Billy Magnuson. And yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, I just wish they would strive for more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and like, yeah, it didn't feel like a separate, like, because this is Dean Fleischer Camp's first, like, big movie after Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and it didn't feel any, like, special. It didn't have that special quality. It felt like a studio job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, Disney is in it to make money. And I think it would be ridiculous to imagine that they would let the reins go too far, straight too far from what they envision. Because, you know, at the end of the day, they need to get paid, man.
Yeah.
All right. Then give me a 4K of Fantasia.
It might come eventually. And then They'll put it in the vault, dude.
Yeah.
Do they even release anything anymore? Like on video? Like
I haven't seen anything in a while.
No, everything goes to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, have they even released the Marvel movies on 4K?
Yeah. No, they do those.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And they do like Mufasa and all the big ones.
Yeah.
But like anything else? No.
No. It's lucky that we got Prey.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we never got No One Can Save You and Barbarian.
Nope.
I have a disc of No One Can Save You.
Yeah, I sent it to you.
I do too. And Bill Barbarian me as well.
But, Bill with the hookup. I was very happy to get that.
those were beauties. They're on my bookshelf. I keep them near and dear. They're great.
So is this a skip? Is this a watch?
I would not say skip. No,
I thought either.
I thought it was fun. There's parts that made me laugh.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Stitch is awesome. Stitch has always been awesome.
Yeah. The Stitch stuff's really good. Like they'd have a good time with that stuff. It really works.
I guess maybe I should just watch the movie. I don't know. I'll get to it.
Eventually. Especially for the animation. The practical effects as well.
Yeah.
Because I believe there's a bunch of practical effects in it.
Which would make sense, actually, considering the director.
Yeah. I think that was why they hired him.
Excellent. I have nothing to add since I've seen neither. So I'm kind of like, maybe eventually.
I don't even have much to like bring, like that I've watched. So that we haven't talked about now.
Before we go on to what else we've been watching, Melissa and I went to a screening yesterday. So we were supposed to go to two screenings this week. We had a slight mishap with the first one. We ended up drinking beers and talking for like 3 hours, so it was fine. But yesterday we went to see a preview screening of Life of Chuck.
Oh.
With Mike Flanagan in attendance.
Nice.
For an introduction and a Q&A. Yeah. And he seems like a really lovely human. Awesome. A really lovely human.
I was hoping to catch a glimpse of Kate Siegel. I was really hoping that she would be there too, because I think she's just one of the most stunningly beautiful women in the world. And I'm always curious about what people look like in real life, because I find often with like screen people, they're actually even better looking in person than they are on screen. So yeah, mm-hmm. that was my one little weird perversion, but she wasn't there. So yeah.
How is the movie? I believe it's the mystery screening for Landmark coming up. So how is the movie in your opinion?
Dramatic pause.
Dramatic yeah. pause. I don't know. Yeah. Melissa, do you want to go first? I don't know.
I think I really struggled with reviewing it afterwards, because the way that Flanagan speaks about it, this is like such a passion project for him. Like, they made this as an independent film. There was no backing. They secured Tom Hiddleston and others in the cast in order to be able to sell the film after they had made it. They pretty much paid almost everyone else at scale. And like called in crazy favors to get people to come in on the movie. The DP on this was also the DP on The Last of Us. So it happened to have Nick Offerman's like private number and texted him to see if he would do the narration for it. Because Flanagan approached Offerman's agent, and the agent was like, "Scale, are you fucking kidding? No, he's not doing that." And then so the DP texted him to see if he'd be like interested in at least reading the script, and he was like, "Yeah, sure, send it to me." And then he agreed to do it. So
there was a lot of that. There was a lot, like, yeah. This entire thing works because of, you know, the favors they called in. Like, nobody was approached through direct channels. Pretty much all of the main cast was all back channels, and, you know, who do you know and who have you worked with? Who can you call? Because that was the only way they were going to get this made.
Yeah. So it was, yeah. And I think actually the DP hooked him up with Tom Hiddleston too, because I think he was also on Loki, or there was some Loki connection.
Oh, no, it was the Moorhead.
Oh, Benson and Moorhead. That's it.
He texted them. He's yeah. like, "I'm just going to text my friends."
His good pals, Benson and Moorhead.
There's the obligatory Benson and Moorhead reference for the podcast.
Of course. Yes. We're going to work this in every episode. It's happening.
So it was quite, like, it was really great, like, listening. And Mike was super passionate about this. Like, he said that he read the Stephen King novella and, like, in late April of 2020. So, like, just as everything was seeming really bleak in the world. This is like sort of the sentimental Stephen King, like there's not really a horror element in here. Mm-hmm. So people will take from that what they will, I guess. if you're going into it expecting like scary Stephen King, you'll probably be disappointed. And that there's three acts to the film. And the through line for me was not super clear. I think that's kind of where it fell a bit for me. I think there's some good stuff in the movie, especially just around like this idea of continuing to live when things are not looking good. Like, we live in a world right now where it seems like everything is going to shit. And there's like something nice about seeing a film where kind of the message is like, yeah, you know, we're all doomed, but like sometimes you find real joy in a small thing, like dancing in front of a drum busker, like, and somehow that makes it all worth it. So it's a really great, there's really nice messaging that's coming out of the film, I think. And I think that's why Flanagan was so passionate about it. Like, he just really felt like this was the kind of message that needed to be out in the world right now. And apparently King loves this adaptation. Like, he watched it multiple times, and he actually asked them if he could come to TIFF with them. It wasn't their idea to invite him. He really wanted to come. So like all of those things, like, kind of make me like the movie more than I actually liked the movie. Like, it was like Flanagan himself is just so Like, he just seems like such a lovely human being and like really into collaborative filmmaking. And he talked about that, about that a bit too. And I was really impressed by it. He was like, yeah, he's like, being a director is really more like, is really more like conducting an orchestra. Like, some people will tell you it's like playing an instrument, you know, like these people who are into auteur cinema. But it's not, it's conducting an orchestra. It's the most collaborative art form there is, because every single person down the line is making a contribution to the piece as a whole. And your job as the director is just to like figure out the, how to make the notes fit. And so I thought that was really that was a really lovely way to think of filmmaking, I think. And I think it comes across in the projects that he does, and the fact that he like so often works with kind of the same people over and over again. So yeah, so I like, I'm fully 100% sold on Mike Flanagan. Was I 100% fully sold on Life of Chuck? Maybe not, but
yeah,
it was still a really lovely way to spend a Sunday evening.
I fully agree. I am in the same boat. I think the movie is okay at best. There are some good ideas. I think some of the sections are stronger than others. I particularly like Act Three, which is where the movie starts, even though it gets really weird towards the end. I think the first like 20 minutes of it is really, 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 really interesting. And yeah, I think the movie plays like, you feel better after you hear him talk about it because he is so passionate. But I like marrying, like divorcing the filmmaker and his passion from what's on screen, the movie itself is, it's okay at best. Like, there's some great moments. There are some real moments of joy, like that dance sequence is a moment of joy. Of course, we all watched Tom Hiddleston dance on Graham Norton. That was like the meme for an entire year. Of course they cast him in this. So it just makes sense. But yeah, I found it just kind of meddling, kind of boring in places, to be honest. I actually thought the accountant monologue was genius. And I'm like, I hope, me too. I hope that ends up on YouTube somewhere where I can send it to all the accountants in my life. Yeah. People that work with numbers.
It's Mark Hamill. And it's so fantastic. Yeah,
it's just so good. Like, I wish there was somebody writing so eloquently and reciting so passionately about all of the boring things in the world, or the things that we perceive as boring, because there is beauty in all things. And I think that that's really, that I thought that was really interesting as well. And the whole conversation about monologuing, I thought was really fun. But yeah, he just comes across as like a genuinely nice guy who just loves movies and loves storytelling and loves storytelling with other people. And you can't help but kind of feel a little bit more love for the thing because such a great person made it and with such a great team. But in reality, it's kind of just a meddling little movie.
Not what I wanted to hear.
Sorry. I want to read the the short story novella and just see, like, I'm just curious about how it translated or whether it feels more impactful on the page. He did talk about how Stephen King is really difficult to translate to screen because so much of King's work is interiority. So translating that onto screen is really difficult unless you just get lazy and use a narrator, which is basically what they did. They got a great narrator in Nick Offerman, but that's exactly what they did. And then as Marina alluded, he got a great question about a monologue, and he totally sort of answered all the critics, because he said, you know, he's repeatedly been criticized by various film and television critics for writing these monologues, because he said, like, they say that that's not how people talk. And then he said, but it kind of is, like, when you're really passionate about something, when you're really feeling something, you kind of do get up on a soapbox. And I agree with him. I think that happens all the time. I think people do like 5-minute monologues on stuff, like how much they hate the new Mission Impossible movie.
Can I just throw this into the ether? Mike Flanagan, Netflix, The Stand. Thank you.
I want The Stand, and I want him to finally get this Dark Tower going.
That
I really
too.
Want the Dark Tower going. I really want to see Gilead. I want to see all of this. I want to see it, all of it, how it's supposed to be. And I think he's the only person that's going to do it.
I still have a really huge soft spot for the 1990s stand.
Me too. It's really good.
I love it.
It's really good. It's really close to it.
Yeah.
I think all of those ABC specials kind of hold up. Even the Shining one. The Shining is very close to the book as well.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those ones a lot.
They're pretty
solid.
And
there were events. Like, it came from that. Langoliers, Tommyknockers. Like, these are all, like, interesting little, like, event television. I remember them being so, like, the new Stephen King miniseries. Because I was, like, I was, like, a preteen, right? So, like, I was totally into that shit. And I'd read all the books, so.
I started reading Stephen King, I think, at age 8 or 9.
Me too.
And it was because of Stand By Me. Like, it was because of Stand By Me. As, like, I was so obsessed with Stand By Me as a film. And then when I found out it was based on a book, I was like, are you kidding? And I went out immediately and got, what is it, Different Seasons?
Yeah, Different Seasons.
The Body.
The Body. Shawshank Redemption's in that one, I think. And,
I am in the minority in that I'm not a huge Stephen King fan. I've read The Stand. I think I tried to read Tommyknockers at some point.
The Stand was like, so you know how that, like, the a couple episodes ago we were talking about how everybody rewatched rewatched Outbreak during the pandemic. Yeah. I reread The Stand.
Yeah.
No shit. The expanded edition, is it the?
Yeah.
Nice.
The version of The Stand that I still have on my shelf is a misprint for, it's like a paperback from the mid to late 80s, early 90s. And it's actually halfway through, a bunch of the pages are misprinted and you can't actually read like two entire chapters because the text has been printed over twice and one of them is backwards and I just can't bear to part with it. So it's still sitting there.
That's a good addition.
Right? I thought so.
Just for the record, my favorite Stephen King book is Firestarter.
Firestarter is really good. It's really good. It's really good.
The one I loved that no one ever talks about is The Eyes of the Dragon.
Yes. Him also doing like
also
fantasy.
Flag.
Randall Flagg.
Yep. Never read
that one. Big part of that one. Well, speaking of which, did everybody see the trailer for The Long Walk? They finally fucking made this movie.
Yeah, I finally saw the trailer. Looks great.
Yeah, I'm into it. This is such an easy slam dunk.
Yep.
It is a disturbing as hell story. So bleak as fuck. And you can do this one well. I'm excited as well for Edgar Wright's Running Man with Glenn Powell.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love Running Man. That movie is awesome.
The movie is awesome. The original book is very fucking cool. And
Running Man, is that a Bachman book?
Yep.
It is a Bachman book. Yeah. It was in the same one. Is The Long Walk part of Different Seasons or is it part of Bachman books?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm thinking it's part of Different Seasons because it'd be a little too much to have, because I know Bachman books, the first story is one never adapt, Rage, which is about the kids snapping in school and the school shooting.
Yeah, not so politically correct anymore.
No.
No, they'll never make that one. It was actually one of my favorite Stephen King stories of all time. The secret movie is Life of Chuck. I'm calling it now because this episode will be out before June 2nd, right? So I'm going to say right now that the early screening, the mystery screening at Landmark Theaters, if you see it on June 2nd, will be
and
Life
if he's,
of Chuck.
And I'm if he's sure. wrong, you can...
I don't see
if
any...
You, if he's wrong and you're at the screening with Steve Stebbing, you can hit him up and he will buy you a popcorn.
Yeah, there
now
we
you
go.
Have to
fuck. That can get really expensive. I've already got the bad karma because they already knocked my video out.
You so. Watch it. It'll be with a re-release of Dogma.
Oh, that'd be fucking awesome. I'll be all over
it. You'll have to report back on what the secret movie actually was.
Yeah. I will. I'll light up the group chat.
Since I know for a fact Bill has seen this, can we talk for a moment about Fountain of Youth and the new Guy Ritchie movie?
Yes, do it.
Which Bill seems to love.
I did not say I loved it. I said it wasn't very good. I thought it was better than Mission Impossible.
I really loved the National Treasure movies. They're so fucking silly, but they are so good. And I really hoped that this would be more of that. And I was really disappointed when it wasn't.
Do you know what the problem is? The script is really bad.
And it's like just over 2 hours long.
Yeah, it's like pretty 2 hours long, and 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of the gobbledygook that they have Natalie Portman and John Krasinski saying in this film, it's just off the wall.
It's silly.
It's so terrible.
It's so silly.
Yeah, but I thought the action's kind of fun.
Yes, agreed.
And it's well shot, and Domhnall Gleeson's having a lot of fun. And
I actually thought he made for a pretty good bad guy.
Yeah, he's good, but like it's just the script is so bad, it's so laughable, and you're laughing at this movie for a good half of the film. Like it's just bad dialogue.
But I will say I really really I can't tell you how much I appreciate the fact that the two lead characters are not a romantic interest. Like yeah. I love that is not like the crutch here. That you know they're not like these two long lost lovers that are coming together for this adventure. They're a brother and a sister, estranged siblings that come together for an adventure, which has a different dynamic. And I really like Natalie Portman and John Krasinski together. They have really good chemistry.
I also like the fun chemistry between Isaac Gonzalez and John Krasinski, they're like weirdly flirting with each other, but it was only John Krasinski doing it.
Totally one-sided the entire time.
Yeah.
It's super silly. It's super silly. But like you say, the action sequences are actually really well put together. There's some really fun camera stuff during that shootout sequence at the pyramids, which I was like, wow, like Guy Ritchie's really fucking going for it here, man. Like this movie does not deserve this.
And the final credit needle drop made me laugh uncontrollably, and I fell off my chair.
No way.
Yeah, if you ever see this movie, Steve, you're going to laugh too. It's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like not that. Terrible. I wished for more.
You can do a lot worse than this.
You can do a lot worse. And I kind of hope that they make more with these characters. I really like the chemistry a lot. I think there's potential for a good franchise here. Apple just needs to give them more money to make more of them.
Yeah. Guy Ritchie.
Who knew?
Sometimes he shows up and the movies actually look good and you know the script sucked. But yeah, he's still doing something with it. He's a decently competent filmmaker.
I agree. He
just needs Matthew Vaughn back.
That would probably help a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Fountain of Youth on Apple. It's okay.
And Stanley Tucci shows up for one scene and we all love the Tooch. So
Of course, he's an Italian bad guy.
and
except for Electric State.
Everybody was awful in that movie.
Everyone was awful in that one. The Millie Bobby Brown effect. I know that poor girl, but she needs better fucking management.
I agree. She's better than most of the stuff that she's been doing. All right. Who's next?
Exactly.
I think that's probably the I'm assuming right, that's I'll, the only overlap, major overlap of new releases, but we will see.
I don't have much. Did I talk about Stephen Boiling Graham Point?
Movie?
Stephen Graham.
Nope.
Yeah. That movie's solid. But not for everyone. Cause I lent it to my father-in-law after. I'm like, this is a great movie, especially if you like The Bear, you'll really like this one, but it's a lot more contemporary and straightforward. And he's like, okay. And he didn't like it. And I was like, oh, I really like it. I like how real time it is. I like how it's also one take. Cause it's the same team as, Adolescence. And I like this real tension thing. And Jason Fleming is in this as the most pompous of fucking mentors to Stephen Graham's character. And it's a really great Guy Ritchie reunion there. I was okay with Final Destination Bloodlines. There are a lot, there are some of the kills that really worked for me. Especially this this weather vane impalement through the head is
I enjoyed it. This is my why I don't know how this happened moment of the podcast. I actually kind of like this.
Richard Harmon
is the reason Richard Harmon is the big reason I love this movie. He is so funny in this movie.
King of Canadian film. Shout out to the Canadian royalty, Gabrielle Rose.
Oh yes, I love her.
Canadian royalty.
Yes,
there is a lot of Canadianness in this movie. Co-directed by Canadians, starring a bunch of Canadians.
It looks so Canadian. It's Vancouver, like all over. This movie is so much fun from beginning to end. That restaurant sequence in the beginning that opens up the film,
it's pretty cool.
Really great.
I actually kind of enjoyed all the nonsense bullshit Gabrielle Rose is like talking about the whole movie, like, and she has a book full of ways to evade death.
The death book.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
I love the death book.
The deaths are really fun. Richard Harmon rules. Once again, you could do a lot worse than this. This is actually kind of fun. And see it on the big screen. It's kind of a fun person to see in a theater movie, I guess. I don't know. Like, this is better than Mission Impossible. How about that? Go see this instead.
Is everything going to be better than Mission Impossible?
No, hurry up. Tomorrow isn't.
I'm gonna get to that, and there's a little bit more depth on it than that. But I did rate Final Destination Bloodlines better than Mission Impossible. Nice. Yes, I gave it a 3.5. And Adam Stein as Zach Lebowski. If apparently they had a really great first meeting for this movie where they like faked killing Zach with like a ceiling fan accident using like practicals and some special effects. So they won themselves this job.
I asked good Zach,
for them. That's fucking cool.
I did an interview with Zach for the podcast last year. And I asked him specifically about that, 'cause I had heard there was a story behind the audition tape. And yeah, he wouldn't tell me what it is because they were saving it for the promotional materials for the movie's release. And I still have not seen the whole story. There is video of it out there because it was a Zoom call.
That's that sounds so great. So I'm definitely into that. And Breck Basinger as the young version, because I watched Stargirl.
Yeah,
and she's also the lead on that one.
Is that Tony Todd's last performance?
Yeah, it is. And I can't lie, because I knew they gave him, like, I didn't read what he says in the movie prior to it, but I know that they gave him the ad lib for the exit of his character. And I got a little mosh from it. It hits because it's a poignant. It's poignant. It's super poignant. No,
completely.
From a legend.
Yeah.
A horror legend. Like, I mean, a big reason why I love the Jordan Peele Candyman is that final moment where they gave Tony Todd his moment. And I was like, I'm a big fan of the guy. I hope they keep making these movies. This movie wasn't as good as the other ones they've done so far, but just because I'm a fan of the original series, I watched Fear Street Prom Queen. I asked for the pre-screener of it, and it's got some okay kills in it. It's a little sanitary. It's a little teenager's first horror movie, but it's got some interesting casting in it. Catherine Waterston is in this movie. I was like, what? Chris Klein?
And horrible.
Her husband.
Horrible. Like the gym teacher. He's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not very good. There's such a Scooby-Doo thing about this movie as
it's
well.
It's terrible. And Susanna Son deserves so much better. Like, I don't know. Her hitting the scene through Red Rocket and being a Sean Baker discovery, and then going from that to the fucking idol to this piece of crap. I'm like, please, can someone put Susanna Son in another good movie? Because she's actually really great and she's super watchable. I would just like to see her in something better than this turd.
Yeah, the thing that got me the most is this is almost directly a Fear Street book. I think within the first 12, I think was.
Oh, so I have to blame R.L. Stine for the bad writing.
That was kind of cool. Mm. Straight up R.L. Stine.
Let's be honest.
No, but from Stephen King, like getting me started reading, I read the shit out of Fear Street. And from Fear Street, I read the shit out of like Christopher Pike. And there was a Friday the 13th book series that I read every single one of those. I skipped R.L. Stine,
but I went right to Christopher Pike.
Wow. I read a lot of Clive Barker.
And
so did I. And like, the books of blood. They are still fucking traumatizing. I refuse to let those go. Dan's like, you haven't looked at those years. I'm like, it does not matter. You can't look at them too often.
What was Nightbreed based on?
Yes, I think so.
Cabal? Yeah.
We got sidetracked again. It's all about the books.
Never happens.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I do. So let's get this one over with. I drove all the way to the other side of Kelowna from Penticton, the furthest I've driven into Kelowna, to go see Hurry Up Tomorrow, the weekend doing therapy, I guess. Like this is him trying to work on his, I don't know, his issues with women, where he's like a shitty gaslighter, but they never really want to outwardly say it. And as well as like Jenna Ortega burns down a house, but you don't, like, there's zero context of anything. Like, I am still struggling to understand what the fuck this movie was even trying to say, besides being a therapy ego experiment for Abel. And I don't know if he's okay.
There's a scene in this film where Jenna Ortega's character tells The Weeknd for like 15 straight minutes what she thinks his songs are about. It's the worst scene I've seen in a movie this year. I wanted to leave the theater. Unwatchable. Could you imagine being a fan of The Weeknd or Jenna Ortega and going to see this movie and getting completely blindsided by it? Like, what was he thinking? Like, how does he expect his fans to even think this is even watchable?
If they stuck with him through the idol.
But they didn't, though. They all hated it.
That's true. Yeah, that's true as well. But and to be to make a movie that is just like, oh, you guys all frustrate me. Okay. That's kind of honestly what I felt this movie was largely. Just all of this is so tough. And it fucking is. I bet it fucking is. I have no idea. But also at the same time, I bet it's so fucking hard to be this guy with expectations, but also you're a fucking douche and a gaslighter, and you treat people in your life like they're disposable. And I think that's a large part of this whole episode
about ego. Tom Cruise's ego, The Weeknd's ego.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Stitch's ego. Stitch.
What a bastard, eh?
What a fucking ego session. We didn't even get to the red carpet shit and how he was trying to outshine that fucking Maya, the little girl. It's her first movie.
I don't really understand what Trey Edward Schultz was doing visually here. It looks like an 80s Aerosmith video.
I know. It's not even his guy. It's not even anybody. It's where is your waves guy?
But this looks like there was that... Was it Bright Lights? Was that the name of the Weeknd song like two albums ago? Where like mm-hmm. this was like
oh I got the whole but, psychoanalysis. But it's like but, that
no
song,
like what so I mean like the visual that. Of the trailer looks like the visual of that album. Like yeah. all of the videos for that album were yeah. very 80s, dark neon red lights, blue lights, and this felt like an extension of that. So I would not be as
it's all the
yeah
it's all the idol guys it's yeah. like all of them mm-hmm. even the writer the Raheem what's yeah
he's it's too bad too because I think he's well, a good musician so. I like his music and you know I saw him at like perform yeah. live at Coachella and on the YouTube and he was incredible. I thought his performance he's great stage presence his music's really good. I even like the new album. I mm-hmm. think it's really good. This movie sucks.
Yeah
stay away yeah, from them
I was wrestling TV with then. What yeah.
I stick to music.
I was when I got out of the theater, I was just kind of like, I knew I didn't like it, but I was like, to what extent? Like, to what extent did I not like?
Yeah, go with your gut on this one, Steve.
So yeah, it is. Yeah, just go yeah. yeah, go deep with this one. I have not actually loaded it onto the Letterboxd yet. And another one I haven't yet is. Hell of a Summer, which is a Billy Brick and Finn Wolfhard's directorial debut summer camp killer movie with a really great Fred Hechinger and just a really terrible everything else. All your kills are off screen. Super frustrating for a horror movie. And you're not funny enough to pull it off. So just kind of a swing and a bit of a miss. And apparently Finn Wolfhard had a hard time shopping the script around due to the fact he was 19. And you can kind of tell why this movie was hard to get made. I think it wasn't until Jason Bateman stepped in to help him out where this gained traction. But yeah, I wish it was better, but maybe he does something like it's definitely like, stop! It's not a stop trying, kid. It's like yeah.
Didn't this come out of TIFF's like young filmmaker program too? Wasn't it? Yeah.
It did. Yeah, yeah.
So. You think Netflix would give him money? Like they've been with him his entire life.
They're on the Millie Bobby Brown mm-hmm. Bandwagon. Well, they can only really support one Stranger Things kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gaten Matarazzo's ideas were probably just too weird for them or something. I don't know. That's all I got, though. That's
who wants to go next?
I don't have very much. So I can go next. So on based on the raving reviews from the last episode, I watched The Wedding Banquet.
Yes.
Which Ooh. Is so lovely.
Oh,
so sweet. I haven't watched it. It's just the nicest movie. It made me really emotional and it left me very happy. It's just a very nice movie. So well made too.
I'm glad you liked it. I thought I was going to be like
no
on an island off that one, but
no, it's impossible. It's everybody is so likable and Bowen Yang. Like I like him, but I find him really insufferable most of the time. Like I think he's really funny and I really want to like him. And I think he seems like a really great person. And I always want to give him the benefit of the doubt. But this is the first time I've seen him in a movie where I've gone, okay, he can actually act. He's not just like playing a bit. And he's quite good. And Lily Gladstone is fantastic. And Kelly Marie Tran is amazing. It's just great talent and a really lovely story that is also... Like it's predictable, but it just feels really authentic and really relatable. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really wonderful.
I also really enjoy like Joan Chen just showing up and destroying.
Oh, she's so good.
So good. I have not watched Wedding Banquet yet, but in a stack of movies I told my father-in-law to watch.
I'd like to know how this goes.
And he's like, oh, no, he was like, what? And I'm like, it's not a Chinese film. It has Chinese characters in it. Like, it's not, it has limited subtitles. Like, it's an American movie.
No, I really liked The Wedding Banquet. I thought it was wonderful. Dan and I watched Neighborhood Watch, the Duncan Skiles movie with Jack Quaid and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, where Jack Quaid plays a young man who's going through some mental health issues, and he thinks he sees a woman being thrown into the back of a van. He goes to the police to tell them that he saw this woman being thrown into the back of the van, and they don't believe him. So his neighbor, who is a little bit slightly crazy security guard, he's been let go or retired from his security job at the university, decides to help him out. And these two guys set off to solve the mystery of the missing woman. It's actually really good. It's very slow burn. Like, not a lot happens. There's a lot of them just driving around, getting themselves mixed up with, like, weird people in strange situations. But at the end of the day, Dan and I really enjoyed it. It's just, it's a very, like, middle of the road, like, adult movie. I don't know how else to explain it. The performances were really good. Some of the mental health stuff is a little ham-fisted, but none of it is, like, so bad that it was like, oh, stop there. Like, I think they try to do a fairly good job of staying authentic and truthful and being careful with the storytelling. But at the end of the day, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good.
And it has the Dan seal of approval. Holy.
Dan also enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought for sure he was going to be out, because it's slow. Like, not a lot of stuff happens. It's a lot of them just driving around and talking. But it's really solid. Like, the characters really work and the writing is pretty good. Kim's Video, which is the documentary about Kim's Video, the famed New York institution that when they went out of business, the owner sold the collection to this Italian city that was going to, like, open a Kim's Video museum. And the shenanigans that happened when they sold the collection, which originally was going to be bought by, like, a bunch of universities wanted it. And because it was a big deal. They had movies that, like, nobody else had. And so David Redman, one of the co-directors, like, makes it a mission to go and find out what happened to Kim's Video and the famed collection. And it turns into this whole big thing. And then they meet Kim, the original owner. It's not good.
No, I didn't like it either.
No, I thought it was the concept. I thought the idea of it sounded interesting, but it just goes on for too long. There's no story here. Like, you would have been better off talking to a bunch of people for 90 minutes that used to go to Kim's Video and finding out what weird things did you watch when you rented at Kim's Video. It's not great.
And really, because I am the king of Canadian film, can we have, like, this version, but with Videomatica instead? And
yeah, I'm in.
Trace probably, that around.
Yeah, probably more interesting than this.
Yeah. Yeah.
True words. Talk to DJ, sire, true words.
Tell you the whole story. That guy's a dude.
Air Force Elite Thunderbirds. So this was clearly a Dan selection on Netflix. A documentary about the Thunderbirds and the 2023 team. It's actually pretty good if you're interested in that kind of thing. They basically talk for 90 minutes to the team that was the 2023 Thunderbirds. And it's interesting because they kind of go into how the selections are made and how the team is built and how they change the team every year. It's fine. I don't know what else to say. It's fine. I enjoyed it. And I'm not a huge fighter pilot person, but I thought it was interesting. The Woman in the Yard.
I just got my Blu-ray of it and haven't watched it yet.
It has promise. It has promise.
I remember when it opened, the theater manager was like, the first, like, 40 minutes is okay, and then it just dies. I'm like, cool, I'm not going to see it anyway. I don't care.
Yeah, I could go with that. It's an interesting premise.
Dare you deny?
Like, admittedly, I like the, like, I don't remember the trailer, so I don't know how much is in the trailer. I like this. Okay, so I
nothing.
I like the setup. Like,
fucking nothing.
I like the fact that it's unconventional for a couple of reasons, which I will not talk about because I don't know what was in the trailer. So it does have promise when it starts. And you're like, oh well, this is interesting. And quite honestly, the first 15 minutes are legitimately solid, and then it just kind of doesn't go anywhere. Like, I can kind of see what they're going for, but it's not successful. It's just very meddling. And then Wick is Pain. Two hours of behind the scenes of John Wick. I was here for all of it. I don't think it's great, to be honest. Like, as far as documentaries are concerned, it's really not a very excellent documentary. But, you know, if you're a John Wick fan, you get all the behind the scenes scoop.
And as I said last episode, like, the people are cool. Like, they look like nice people. They came from like humble beginnings and they figured it out, and it's great.
They turned that shit into a franchise, man. Yeah. And they are printing money now. Printing money. So yeah, it's always fun to watch Keanu Reeves just talk about stuff. He's Keanu. And he says fuck in the best way possible. He takes such pleasure in it. I love it. And that's all I've seen.
Do you want to go, Melissa, or do you want me to go? I have one film.
You go do it, Bill. Do it.
Okay. I'm bringing an early one too. I saw Karate Kid Legends.
Oh yeah.
Woo. Oh yeah, I see it on also Thursday. Just
incredibly fine. These movies have like they're all kind of the same, you know. A kid gets accosted by some karate group, and then they have a kumite at the end. Like, they're all kind of the same. The difference between this one and those ones, this one is incredibly fast. It's like an hour and 25 minutes.
It just
flies by, and it's watchable. It's really tight. And Jackie Chan shows up, and
I was going to say, you got Jackie Chan.
They got some training montages, and Ralph Macchio comes in, more training montages. Then they fight, and the movie's over. Love it.
It's
quite fine. I didn't mind it.
Was there any Cobra Kai crossover or no?
Absolutely no comment. do you really want spoilers?
No, I actually want to see this.
Okay. No. Oh, I'm stay. I'm seeing it on Thursday. I got my ticket already. I'm ready to go.
And the kid teaches him the footwork skills and stuff. It's he used to be a boxer, and he gets his ass kicked in a boxing fight because he's Josh Jackson. Yeah, it's decent. It's a Karate Kid movie. It's exactly what you think it is, but as I said, it's a pretty fast watch, and I think it'll do decent business. It's a good family film, I guess. Cobra Kai kind of went off the rails at the end, but I think this is kind of a good little piece of entertainment. And that's it for me. Other than Last of Us Season 2 was pretty cool.
Is it done now? Oh, I haven't watched. There was an episode this week, right?
Oh, yeah.
And okay, I haven't watched it yet.
It's a mofo.
I'm a week behind.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try and speed through some of these because there was not a lot of great stuff that I've watched since I was last on the show. So another Simple Favor.
Yuck.
I mean, Isle of Capri looks really lovely, and that's about as much as I can really say about this movie. Moving right along. Ash, sci-fi movie on Amazon Prime. This was a big nope for me.
We kind of shit all over that one last episode. Yeah.
We were not impressed.
Super derivative. And I'm realizing that I like how Aza Gonzalez looks, but I don't think she's a particularly talented actress. Unfortunately. Anyway, and then, okay, Fight or Flight. Totally agreed with everybody. This was a super fun time. I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah. And I thought Charithra Chandran was phenomenal. Like, fuck those Regency dresses. Girl can throw down. So I thought it was really fun. Yeah. My only beef with it was at the end of the film, like, we know where you are. Like, we know where you are. What's the biggest moral conundrum in the world right now? And you're in a hospital and you wake up and you just see kids' pictures on the walls. Like, we know you're in Gaza. Just fucking put a watermelon in the shot. Like, just do it. Come on. Because that's where I want to believe that these people have gone. And then I also watched Havoc, which watching Havoc like on the heels of Fight or Flight was like kind of an interesting comparison, because Fight or Flight is completely tongue in cheek and winking at you the entire time, and Havoc takes itself way too fucking seriously.
It's very serious.
So, was just kind of disappointing. Like, so, I don't know.
Somebody does get shot with a harpoon, though.
It has its moments, dude.
Yeah, I mean, the action sequences are pretty, like, they move pretty fast. They're pretty solid. It's just that it's just not fun. Like, why couldn't you be having fun with this? Like, you cannot have these kind of ultra-violent fight scenes and that be serious. Like, come on, man. Like, don't do it. Don't do it. Anyway, I also rewatched It Follows because I haven't seen it in a while.
That movie rules.
Man, that movie. And it still holds up so well. And I still just love that it's like, this is movie tricks 101 at its finest, right? Like, you have, because of this premise, like, every time somebody walks into frame, you're just not sure if they're really there. And that's just, it's so fucking genius. Like, it's just low budget, low cost, super effective. Really love that film. I also finally caught up with Kneecap, which predictably I loved. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a really fun gateway into the discussion of Indigenous language protection, interestingly.
Yes.
It's not a super political, like, it's weird because I think their songs aren't super political. Like, a lot of them are just really about partying.
Yeah.
But just the fact that they're doing it in Irish makes it political. And then I just really appreciate all of their outspokenness around Gaza and Israel and how much flack that they've been taking for that lately. So
I'm just impressed by how, like, they're solid actors too, like, completely out of, like, nowhere. I'm like, is this actually them? And then to find out that it is, it's like, okay, Jesus.
I also really enjoy the fact that I can play a song like Guilty Conscience at work and the accents are so thick they don't hear the C word and a bunch of other words, and because they just don't sound like they're speaking anything because the accents are so thick. I love it.
Also late to the party, but finally caught up with Late Night with the Devil, which... Yeah, I love Steph Malkin. I love the first three quarters of this movie. And I kind of, I didn't feel like they stuck the ending. It felt a little too...
I like the ending a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt really like I was kind of enjoying the sort of pseudo-documentary feel of the beginning of it. This kind of found footage deal. And then, I don't know, man, when her head splits open and light starts pouring out of it, it just kind of lost me.
I thought it was great. And this is also Dan approved, guys.
That that girl had the crazy eyes.
Oh, wow. She's good.
She's so good.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. And I love the intercuts with the devil face.
Some excellent editing in that
so
movie.
So creepy. That was a great theater watch. Like, I was
I'm
so
mad at myself for not seeing
movie.
It at the Rio, because that would have been the perfect place to watch it.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Absolutely. That feels like a VIFF movie too. Like one that would have played VIFF.
I think it was timing.
Timing.
I also watched Apocalypse Z on Amazon Prime so that you don't have to, because it's garbage. I can't.
That sounds awful.
Sometimes I'm a very highbrow moviegoer, and sometimes I just want to watch fucking zombie movies. Like, I will watch any zombie movie, and some of them are just really horrible, and this one is really horrible and not worth anybody's time. Fear Street Prom Queen, we already discussed it. Really bad. Really not worth your time. Yeah.
Lily Taylor is
totally underused.
Lily Taylor is
I felt like her even being in it was a red herring, because I was something's going to happen with her, and then nothing fucking happened with her.
Yeah, I thought so too. But that also, like, using her in exactly the thing that you think you would use her in.
So that's it. That's my speed round of crap I watched, because it was mostly crap. Oh, I did go rewatch Super Mall Apartment, which I hadn't seen since VIFF. And it's still beautiful, and it still makes me feel better about the world.
Ending on a positive, I love it.
Yeah.
My first film of VIFF 2024.
Still haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'll get to it eventually.
It's
story of my life. Story of my life.
Worth a watch. Worth a watch.
All right, Bill, what's coming, dude?
May 30th. The Philippou brothers are back. Bring her back.
I'm excited.
So,
which I heard isn't like jump scary,
a mind fuck? But is like it looks like scary as fuck.
A friend of mine said that it's just like that film is really screwed up. I'm like, oh yeah, let's go.
Who, Melissa? We're gonna have to make a date to go see this because there's no way I can convince Dan to go see this with me.
That works for me because I don't want to see it by myself either. Like, not one of those ones where I want to sit.
I'm going to be. I'm ending up seeing it by myself, but I situate myself by sitting in the very, 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 very back.
No one can see you jump, but you can see everyone else jump.
They call that the Bill seat.
I only sit there.
There we go.
Only sit universally in the back during festivals. When I go to the movies, I try to sit near the front because then I don't have to see idiots take their phones out because we're all sitting behind me. I don't swear at you the entire time.
That's fair.
I have really terrible vision, so I sit really far back.
The truth comes out. Now we know the secret. Yeah. All right.
Marina and Melissa missed it. So I'll say it again. Jane Austen, Wreck My Life expands. So
I cannot wait.
Another chance to see it, I guess.
Okay, so story about this. We did get there. It just, the theater was full. Like, it was just, there were no seats. It's sold out. Mark is like, this never happens, but there is no seats left inside.
Yeah.
I guess they say.
That's so crazy.
Exactly.
I've heard that happening in a long time.
And it was a nice evening. It was like actually a nice, like, sunny evening.
We sat outside and had a drink.
Yeah.
Or a couple.
Wow.
That's crazy. Karate Kid Legends opens. I say, see it. It's decent.
I'm seeing it on Thursday.
This is, I think, might be the low-key sleeper of the next episode, if you all see it. Jesse Armstrong is back of Succession fame with Mountain Head. It's HBO. I can't wait to see this. I love Succession. I think it's incredible. So, and supposedly it's the cast is incredible.
Rami Youssef is in this.
It's a bunch of billionaires, like the big tech bro billionaires, go to like a secluded mountaintop and shit happens.
And then someone's AI, one of the Corey Michael Smith's AI goes out of control and starts creating problems.
I can't wait.
It's like all about liability and like where your ownership over your own entity is. The trailer is fucking great. The trailer, I think, is a really nice setup for it. I watched it the other day. So, Mountain Head, I'm definitely looking forward to. As well as
June 6th. June 6th, Dogma. I think we've all probably seen that one already.
I'm not going to. What movie? Who directed
Wes
that?
Wes Anderson.
Never seen it, guys. Seen it.
Lars von Trier? No.
Wes Anderson's attack on the Catholic Church. I forgot when Wes Anderson attacked the Catholic the Church. What's that movie about angels? exactly. Wes Anderson's poop monster would be
from
so
the world
crazy
of John
looking.
Wick.
Ballerina.
I'm low-key excited for this one. I also like Ana de Armas.
Yeah. Marina, you can have Keanu. I'll take Ana de Armas. Thank you.
I'll take them both. I don't need to be selective. Yeah. I love equally.
So I guess it's the next week in Canada, but in the United States of America and New York and LA, The Life of Chuck opens. You heard what they already said about 13th. It. I hope it's good.
It did win the audience award at TIFF. I will say that. So Marina and I maybe were a little lukewarm on it, but like the fact that an independent film won the audience award at TIFF is.
I mean, it means something.
Deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Phoenician Scheme opens. The new Wes Anderson. I'm gonna, as you guys said, I am also a little sick stick of the shtick. He makes the same movie every time, and the plots are getting worse and worse. At least they're meticulous looking, I guess. I hope it's funny. I can't wait to see Kate Winslet's daughter in a starring role. That's gonna be cool. And that cast is incredible, so hopefully it's a good movie. I hope for the best. Jesus. There's a new Al Pacino movie called The Ritual with Dan Stevens.
Yep. I'm watching it, dudes. I have to see this. You had me at Dan Stevens. I needed to see nothing else.
Yeah, that Pacino was dubious,
but Dan Stevens.
I'm not joking. I saw, they sent me the trailer. I was oh, Al Pacino, Dan Stevens. Okay, sold.
Yeah, I
bring it on.
I was reading, I was reading the description and I saw Dan Stevens. Like, I just shut it. Didn't even look at it. Just like, that's it. That's all I need.
Oh God, we're such easy sellers. We're such easy marks.
Because he picks fun projects, man.
He does. Yeah. Like, he does.
That's the thing. There's certain actors you can rely on their taste.
Yes.
I feel like Dan Stevens is one of those people.
I'm with you.
I'll watch you be an Indiana Jones big giant ape tooth extractor. That's
tooth extraction scene is incredibly great.
You can do what you want. It's so good. It's so good. He's just he's worth the price of admission. Dan Stevens
acting like Crocodile Dundee, like taking a tooth out. Like, it's incredible. Nothing like
It's so fucking great. In a movie that's like
it's all right. And stuff, there's a movie called Dangerous Animals coming out. From Sean Byrne.
Yes. Looks great. Looks really, really great. Yes. The loved ones.
Yeah.
Yes. The loved ones. Sean Byrne.
Jack Courtney.
Yes. Please.
I'm in. Yeah. I like him.
Yes. Yes. I love Aussie horror so fucking much. And this feels like that rusty, gross horror. Yeah. But on the ocean. Like, I'm
hopefully
in.
Steve will make it to see that, and we'll be able to talk about it next episode. There's an animated Predator film coming out on Hulu called Killer of Killers.
Nice. I had the screener.
Hopefully it's good. Oh, really?
It's Dan Trachtenberg that directed it.
That does not hold a lot of water with me, guys.
Really?
Well, no, Prey is great.
Like Prey?
But like that Prey doesn't necessarily translate to an animated feature film. Ten Cloverfield, not great.
Oh, I love that movie. I think it's great.
Mm. Not a fan. And unless Steve has anything else, that is it for me.
There is a comedy, a mystery comedy, a horror comedy, thriller comedy, with Nick Kroll and Andrew Reynolds called I Don't Understand You. That's coming out on June 6th as well.
Do we know what we want to watch for the next show? I thought it would be F1, but it's not for a while.
So. That's like four weeks back away.
I think Bring Her Back.
No, that's not gonna be until
I think Bring Her Back is a good good option.
Yeah. I'm into
unless you want to do Ballerina, but I would say Bring Her Back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll say Bring Her Back.
Sally Hawkins. Sally Hawkins.
In a horror movie, I'm so in.
Yes, in a wholesome role at all. Yeah. I've heard some stuff about her performance in this movie. So I'm very, very jacked about this film.
And that trailer is just insane.
I kind of hope she goes full Toni Collette in that film.
Me too.
Let's do it.
Me too. How are you guys on Talk to Me?
That's good.
Yeah, I like it.
It's been a while now. Yeah, I like it a lot. I feel like it didn't get to the level I wanted to, but I still really like it.
Dipped a little lower than I thought it was going to be, but
that's what I'm talking about. That's so what good I'm talking
up
about.
Until then.
Leading all the way there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It
certainly shows great promise. And this, I was sold on the trailer. Like the first trailer, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I'm like, it's weird.
Apparently you still don't know what's going on when you watch.
I'm fine with it. So that's fine. Yeah. I'm fine with it. Until the next time, where can folks find you?
I am Bill Harris. I I'm never actually on Blue Sky, so I don't even know why I'm saying it. It's kind of a dead platform. At that, Bill Harris. I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam69. And I said last week that Adrian and I were going to record a podcast. It still hasn't happened. Supposedly it's happening tomorrow. But in typical green screen of death fashion, we just record maybe when we want. Maybe. I don't know. Sure. We'll be talking about our top 10 list of last year. And in almost June. But
can it be the same, Bill?
Yeah, probably. Hopefully.
How many times can you amend it?
Hopefully, I will.
The 6 months
asterisk
that we've had.
Hopefully, I'm going to read out all 34 films I ranked. But I also might throw in a mid-year, because are we doing a mid-year in two shows?
We can.
Yeah.
There are no rules here. We can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're loosey goosey. I'm going to
be really disappointed when I have the amateur at number one. But
you haven't watched Springer back yet.
You guys are going to be really mad.
My question is, what is Steve going to have at number one?
Come on, Bill. You haven't watched The Smurfs.
That trailer is so bad. It's so Rihanna, bad.
It's so awful.
I said to Dan, what is it? It's like the Smurfs through trolls.
It's like gross.
It's not good.
It's disgusting. It's not good. It's disgusting. It's a disgusting cross-level marketing bullshit that just makes me
I was disappointed. Actually,
upset.
Very disappointed.
I think the other trailer that actually melted my brain into a pile of goo with marketing was Gabby's Playhouse. There's a trailer for this Gabby's Playhouse and Kristen Wiig's in it. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I feel like I'm getting fucking punked or something.
That show
like
is huge.
Like existentially screwed with. I don't know a single thing about it. So I'm like, so I was like, what the fuck is this? Anyway,
that's it for me. Sorry.
I think I'm with Bill. I literally only post the show on Blue Sky, so I'm not even gonna bother. You can find me on Letterboxd when I actually update my list, which will probably be tomorrow, at the Marina.
I too am on Letterboxd as at Melzy.
If there is a social media, just type in the Steeple Dead and you'll probably find me. And you can message me there, find all my shit there. I am also findable on my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show with my daughter, Chloe, every week, except for last week.
I went to look for it on Friday morning, and it was not there. I'm like, what the fuck,
Steve? Yeah. I know. I laughed last week because I went away and I didn't get back in time to organize a show. But I will be back with a lot this week. We come out Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I'm also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Marina. Whoop, no, that's with you guys.
I'm so loved.
With Taylor and Kurt. I know. I just like so because I literally just did the show yesterday. We did our episodes were on Phantasm 2.
Nice.
Lord of the Dead. I think that one was called. And then three. Phantasm 3, Lord of the Dead, and then Phantasm 4, Oblivion, which I'll say right now suffers from Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2. Problems where it's just mostly flashbacks to the first movie. You're like, what the fuck is this Don Coscarelli? I love Agnes the man, but Scrim. Come on, dude. Angus Scrim is so good. He is so damn good. Everyone else sucks. Terribly. Even Reg Banner, just not good. Just all sorts of not good. And so rapey. But that's the time that those movies came out. Also, I'm on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift, which is on Toronto's News Talk 1010, Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time on the iHeartRadio network. And you can also look up that show on anywhere that you get podcasts and get the podcast version.
Awesome. Until the next episode, you can find links to all of the things that we talked about today at atcpod.ca. And until next time.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.